poking around with truth as we poke around on our keyboard as we look at artificial intelligence today. This is episode number 770 of The Next Step, March 16th, 2023.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to The Next Step with Father Vazquez. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vazquez brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. There's no need to check your brain in at the door. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
It is most probably that you own one or you have owned one sometime in your life. I would venture to say most people have, right? A Timex watch? Do you have one on right now? Do you own a Timex watch? You probably have owned one somewhere along the way, right? Timex. Remember that name. Hey, how are you? I hope everyone's doing well. Good to have you with us today for the next few minutes. We're going to be talking about some wild things, not only about time, not only about Timex, but about creativity. Because I'm really excited today. It's like, last Monday night, we had our Bible study, and I went off on truth. Okay, now that is a Bible study topic, if I've ever heard one, right? What is truth? Doesn't Pilate ask Jesus, like, hey, what is truth? And Jesus actually says, I am the truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Interesting, because within Christianity, truth is a person. It's Jesus Christ. Got that? The way we understand it, truth is a person, is Jesus Christ. But what I did this Monday night at the Bible study was talk about what we perceive as truth, what is being fed to us as truth. And not that that's important, because obviously throughout the centuries, throughout the millennium, different things have been fed to us as truth. And it's interesting because when you think about the destruction of societies, the destruction of communities of culture, where do they attack? They attack libraries, because when they attack the library, you have a chance of erasing the past and therefore erasing the truth. This is, we as Armenian people know this very well. You talk about post-genocide in Turkey. The average Turk does not know. The guy who's been brought up in Turkey does not know that there was a genocide. And so we're talking about apples and oranges. When you're sitting at a table and you're saying, well, the rest of the world accepts the genocide of 1915 as perpetrated by the Turkish nation, by the Ottoman Empire, against the Armenian people. And you have a group of people that have never been taught this. This sounds foreign. What are you talking about? You're talking about my ancestors? They did something like that? How come I have never heard that? Well, it's never been taught to you, right? So truth needs a means of transporting itself. It needs a vehicle by which you transport it. And I was very excited at the beginning of this year when I discovered one late night artificial intelligence. And I know what you're thinking. Like, you discovered artificial intelligence. I mean, isn't that all around us? You just discovered that? No, I don't mean it that way. I'm talking about the formal artificial intelligence that's coming to us by computers. And of course, it was just a matter of time before we would be at this point. I mean, remember Moore's Law, the idea that the number of transistors that can fit on a computer chip will double every 18 months. And as somebody who's evolved with computers, and I've been watching them since the early days, and this is where we go into the Timex. I learned on a Timex, I think it was called the Z81, if I'm not mistaken. It was a small little computer that was sold at the local drugstore, at the Long's drugstore, and that's where I would look at it and envy it. You know, it was like a $99 little thing. It was a small little computer. self-contained. And, you know, we were just married. I mean, $99 was big time then. But I had my eye on it anyway. I was lucky enough. I had a wife that was understanding. Susan agreed to it. And I said, don't worry, we'll do our finances with this. I gave her every reason that I could. And we bought a small little computer. It was called a Timex Z81. And you could do just about everything on there. Yeah, you really could. You programmed it. It had some basic language on it. And you would program it. And that's why I started learning that, you know, this is exciting, that there is a potential. It's not about what the computer can do. It's how you can program it to do other things. And I remember at that time, it was the amount of memory in there was 1K, one kilobit. And within a few weeks, within a few months that I became an enthusiast of this, I realized that I needed more memory. And so I went what was really exciting at that time. This is early 1980s. Silicon Valley had not yet been labeled as Silicon Valley. But there was a lot of small little tech companies, one of which was Apple Computers down the street. And we would have these meetings of programs. People would in these are like electronic eggheads and everything. And it's only intimidating when you go to your first one. But after a couple of them that I went to, I was like a regular. Whoa, this is exciting, you know, and everybody's got their little laptop. Laptop, when I'm talking about it, we're talking about this small little computer that has a huge television screen as a monitor and just yards of extension cords because you had to connect it to something to make it work. But we were filling up lecture halls and exchanging information, exchanging programs. And I remember somebody got up and said, you need to beg, borrow, or steal more kilobits of RAM. Random access memory. And I remember that when he said it. And so I bought 16 kilobits, which was the same price as the computer. And this was my first introduction to Moore's Law that, you know, before you know it, things were going to be moving up. And so there we were talking about a 5 megabyte, which would be, I guess, 5,000 kilobytes, I think, right? Anyway, whatever the math is on that, 500 or 5,000, but I got 5 megabytes, and it was a huge unit. It was the size of, I would say, about 2 shoeboxes, put them next to each other. That was a 5 megabyte unit that would drive what was the first Apple computers that we had. This is pre-Macintosh, and Susan bought me for my birthday an Apple IIc, it was called. In 1985, but you needed more RAM, you needed more memory. It wasn't enough to have computer power, you needed more memory. Now, I made the Timex tie-in, but I want to tie in with truth, okay? Because here we are today, where we are talking about terabytes of memory. You have terabytes that you could afford and have in your house. I think last Christmas I bought a 5 terabyte hard drive for something like $89. Yeah. So Moore's Law at its best. You know, here it is. Every 18 months, the amount of transistors that you could put on a chip are doubling. Okay, so now imagine this. We have so much space, so much area where we can put this information. What can you store? Well, the latest thing now is called artificial intelligence. And the way it works is basically you are filling up computers with information. A computer would have a chance to, let's say, read an entire library of books in a time of a few weeks. Not only read them, but to absorb them in the sense that they would able to make some small little word clouds. So you take a small little bit of information and you would associate it with other things. And it would take a human being several lifetimes, let's say it that way. I mean, impossible for you to go to a library today and read all the books in there. Start at one end of the library and get to the other end, you're talking about how many lifetimes? But for a computer, you've now increased it, doubling every 18 months. You know, the amount of information and storage, the amount of processing power, everything that's happening on that computer chip and much more. So now you're at a point where you have a computer that is what they're talking about is chat boxes. And you're probably familiar with this if you've done any type of shopping online or anything. You know, you'll get the small little pop-up window that'll say, would you like to chat? And you put in a little bit of information. What was your order number? You put it in, and then it comes out and gives you some standard line, like, you know, what can I do for you and everything. It's a chat box. It's a robot that is chatting with you. Well, earlier this year, they came out with some chat bots that were accessible for all of us. In other words, they put it out there. And one of which I got hooked into was OpenAI. It was an open chat, artificial intelligence, open in the sense that anybody could use it. And I started playing around with it. And one night I just went into this horrible, horrible, what is it called, rabbit hole, where you're just going down, 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 down. And it's horrible in the sense because you're realizing you love it so much. And it took me back to those early years back in the 80s when we had these small little computers. And we were just on the edge of programming unusual things. Like, for instance, a very simple thing. Like if A plus B equals C, let's say C plus D equals E, therefore A plus B plus D would equal E, right? If A plus B equals C, you could eliminate the C plus D. You could eliminate the C in the second equation and make it A plus B plus D equals the E. So they were just logical progressions of stuff. And you start wondering about it. I ended up in a town called Pasadena that has horrible, horrible lighting in the traffic light system, okay, up until today. And I actually, one day, the poor councilman came to our door looking for votes and everything. I said, you know, I don't get it. We're in Pasadena. You've got JPL up the street. You've got Caltech down the street. You've got Pomona, which is like where all the engineers are. With all of this brain power around us, why can't we program our signals? And the thing that came to my mind was one of the first experiments that we did on computers back in the 80s. And it was basically an if-then statement. If there is a car standing in front of a red light, change the red light to a green light. If there is cross traffic going through, change the green light to a red light. If-then. If there is cross traffic, then change the light to a red light. And this is basic programming. It's not brain surgery, but it's just interesting that here in a town like Pasadena, you can't even get that. Anyway, I'm sure there's many towns like this. I think the insult to injury was when the councilman said, we have the most sophisticated lighting system in the area. And I'm going, oh yeah, okay, this guy really gets it. By the way, his name is Masuda, and he's still in office, and fat chance he's going to get out of there. Last election, he just won by a landslide, even though you see this dysfunctionality here. Anyway, digress, back on the platform, okay? So artificial intelligence now gives us this opportunity to really explore a lot of things, to have a chat, to discuss things that you might not be able to discuss even with a friend. For instance, imagine if we were able to take all the different biblical translations that there were, look at them side by side, and then compare a set of words, say a phrase, from one translation to the other, compare it to the Greek, compare it to some of the ancient texts, such as Aramaic, compare it to such ancient texts as the Armenian original one, and then process it out and say, where have we deviated, or where is the consistency, and therefore, what can we draw from this text analysis? Now, for you and I to do that, yeah, you could do that. We could put out a bunch of different translations side by side, look at them, and it would take a good amount of time to do that, right? But imagine asking a computer, would you please compare the 20 known English versions of the Standard Bible? Let's, for instance, say John chapter 1. Would you compare them all? Compare them against the Greek, compare them against the Aramaic, and then specifically go after the Armenian text and tell me what are the results, what are the comparisons, how do they line up with one another? And imagine that computer answering you right now in regular English. Well, I found that in verse 1, the similarities are negligible. But in verse 2, you will note that in the second and fourth word, there are derivatives and so on and so on. You would get an analysis. And wouldn't that be exciting? It would be some kind of conversation that we've never had before. Now we're talking about something, aren't we? We have new conversations, new ideas. And those new ideas start pushing us to the edges of reality. There is a website, for instance. These people do not exist. What does that mean? Open it up. These people do not exist. It's a website of pictures of people that do not exist in reality. They're created. Yes, albeit they're two-dimensional images. In other words, they exist on your screen. There are pictures of people that look like you and me. Human beings, yes. But they don't exist in reality. They've been created through imaging. So, you know, what is truth? Back in 2014, I led a pilgrimage to Armenia. We led a pilgrimage to both sides of Ararat. It was probably the last one. It was on the 99th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide that we did that. And I had about 25 pilgrims with me. I led this pilgrimage, okay? So we're going through there, and I had this photographer, Gregory Baylarian, my dear friend, one who did our website. And we were embarking on this project called the 100th anniversary, or the 100-year journey. And there was a set of photographs that we needed to take, one of which was the sun setting behind Mount Ararat. And interesting, the positioning of Ararat, it doesn't make it, you can't get that sunset picture. You can't get it from sitting in Yerevan. You have to kind of like float around. You have to go around the mountain. And guess what? We were doing this pilgrimage around Mount Ararat. We were going all the way around. So there we were in Turkey, and we had a Turk guide with us who was going to show us different places and get us to Mount Ararat so that we could photograph the sun setting behind it. And this was like, you know, once in a lifetime, because you're only there for that one day. And, you know, we got to do this. Our visas and everything was coordinated for this sunset. And guess what? The weather was perfect for it. And we get there, and the guide, I guess, got excited because there was some kind of a castle there that belonged to some old. I laugh every time I think about it. Some old king that was the ruler in that area, and it had some historical relevance. And needless to say, I can't even remember what it was because I was so frustrated because this man is taking 25 of us to this thing while Mother Nature is playing one of its most beautiful, beautiful roles in our lives by making the sun set behind this beautiful, majestic mountain, Mount Ararat. And we can't get there. We can't get to the mountain to take this picture because this guy is showing us some medieval castle that has, you know, big deal. Some Turk lived there, you know? Anyway, big frustration of a lifetime, right? Well, guess what? The other night, sitting in front of my computer with the tools of artificial intelligence, I said, give me a picture of the sun setting behind Mount Ararat. And it came up on my screen. It came up on my screen. A picture that doesn't exist in reality, but there it is. Take a deep breath, a deep, deep breath. We'll take our break right now, and I'll be back with more. This is the next step. Very real reality. Enjoy it. Yadli, Dambai, of course. Zulal, who else would be that clear, huh? Isn't that beautiful? That is off of their latest album, The Shepherd's Clock, which came out last month. Just an incredible album. It's one of those that I'm just got on like, it's like on circular. I bought the album, I downloaded it, and it's just like on a stick that just keeps recycling. So I'm getting used to all of the songs. You know, kind of like you do that with music that you really, really love. You just got to hear it over and over so that, you know, the intricacies and the patterns and everything. And this one was this kind of like, there's a few on every album that just kind of like get to the top of the list. This was one of them, Gokhba Yaili. I will put a link on today's show notes, not only to this album, to this music, but to all of the wonderful stuff that Zulal puts out. And like I always say, support these artists because they make our life so much more pretty, beautiful. You got to say God bless them. I really do. I just love this music. And now back to our show. We are back. I am talking about artificial intelligence and shared with you a story about going up to Mount Ararat looking for a sunset and then finding it on my computer screen several years later thanks to artificial intelligence. Now, is it true? Well, I don't know. It exists, right? It exists on my screen. Does it exist in reality? Now you start talking about the philosophical issues, right? What is the reality? Well, I'm seeing it, right? There it is. That's my reality. It's on my screen. But if I were to walk to Ararat, would it be there? Well, now we have the placement of different things. We have these objects that we can place in certain places. Yeah, we place the sun right at Ararat. Imagine that. Well, think about if you could do something like that, a huge sun. Imagine if you could put small little objects. Imagine if you could locate and put hotchkars on the top of Mount Ararat. Get the idea where we're going with this. Well, let me back up a little bit, okay? Because what I did that night that I got, it went into the rabbit hole, was actually engage in conversation with artificial intelligence. And I brought that to our Bible study last Monday night. And it just, within 2 months since I did that at the beginning of the year, and here we are in March, I mean, just the advances. And I want to share a little bit of it with you because I did talk about it at Bible study, and I think it's important that this gets recorded as part of our next step. Because the next step is a journey. It is the next step. These are small little steps that we're taking. And what's interesting about the next step is it's not about getting to a destination, but it's about walking. It's about walking and taking the next step. Each step is a very important step. So let me ask you this. These people that we see on the screens, they don't exist. Well, what about people in reality, people who have been alive, but have never had the opportunity to coexist or to mingle or to share some thoughts with? And so that's where it took me. That's where artificial intelligence took me. I said, what would happen if Gomidas Vartabed, okay, here's a 19th century person who comes over into the 20th century and then succumbs to the violence of the genocide and is confined into a mental institution. A brilliant, brilliant mind, musical genius, he's been called. Gomidas Vartabed. What if he met up with Aram Khachaturian, also from the 19th century, who bled over into the 20th century? So they're basically contemporaries, but as far as I know, they didn't meet. What might their conversation be like if they did meet? That's interesting, isn't it? Gomidas Vartabed and Aram Khachaturian. So I asked it. I asked this chat box. I said, tell me a little bit about what would happen. It says, if Gomidas and Aram Khachaturian were to meet, it is likely they would have a fascinating conversation about music and Armenian culture. Okay, that's kind of like this, no duh. Yeah, of course. Yeah, what do we expect? But now it gets interesting. Now this artificial intelligence, this chat box, is going to speculate and put together something. What it might be like. It starts off by telling us, first of all, well, given their shared interest in Armenian music, it is likely that Gomidas and Khachaturian would discuss the rich history of Armenian music, the various styles and genres that exist, and the challenges facing modern Armenian music. Okay, so it's taking everything that it's read here and there, what's available in multiple articles, books, and synthesizing and giving you a small little summary. And what would that conversation be like? Gomidas. Good afternoon, Aram. It's a pleasure to meet you. Aram Khachaturian. Good afternoon, Gomidas. The pleasure is mine. I've long admired your work in preserving and documenting Armenian folk music. Thank you, Aram. I consider it my life's work to ensure that our rich musical traditions are not lost in time. What about you? I understand that you've also been incorporating Armenian folk music into your compositions. Well, yes, that's correct. I've always felt a strong connection to our musical heritage and have tried to integrate it into my work whenever possible. Okay, so basically we're sitting here distanced by over 100 years from these historic characters that in my lifetime were very real. I mean, I knew people who knew these people, but now distanced by time. And so we can speculate, but fairly intelligently, given all the resources that we have, and thanks to the aid of to computers and the number of transistors that we can put into a computer that can process all of this information, something that you and I can't do, namely to take all that information, libraries, and bring it down to the summary. What does this mean for us? So what we did Monday night at the Bible study was talk about some of the other topics. For instance, those were people that were distanced by geography. That's why they didn't meet. But imagine people who might be distanced by time. For instance, what would a conversation with a composer today, like, say, a Chakmakian or a Dikran Hamasyan and Gomidas be like? A composer who's doing Armenian music today. What would the artists such as, you know, Zulal, such as Element Band, Aradabanjan, what would his conversation be with an Aram Khachaturian? You know, we're going to be seeing Greg Hosharyan next week in concert. What would his conversation with an Aram Khachaturian be like? Interesting, right? I don't know what it would serve, except maybe just to be interesting. And that in itself is entertainment. But what would it do to promote, let's say, a line of thought? And so I went ahead and I asked the computer, artificial intelligence, what might the Armenian nation look like if the Armenian genocide of 1915 did not occur? Interesting, huh? Is it more than interesting? It says, if the Armenian genocide did not occur, it is possible the Armenian population would be larger and more geographically dispersed than it is today. That truly is interesting, because you've got to wonder, if it didn't, what might have happened? Would we have just ended up in Turkey and just been a finished race by this time, 100 years later? The Armenian people in the Ottoman Empire was decimated during the genocide, with estimates of the number of Armenians killed ranging from 1 to 1.5 million. Without the loss of life, the Armenian population would likely be larger and more evenly distributed across the region, including in Turkey, where there was once large Armenian communities. So this is interesting that this robot has taken all this information and put together a summary in that sense. It is possible that the Armenian people would have a more political autonomy and representation within the Ottoman Empire. Prior to the genocide, Armenians had advocated for greater political rights and autonomy. Finally, it is possible that the geopolitical landscape of the region would be different if the Armenian genocide did not occur. The genocide played a significant role in the formation of modern Turkish state. Okay, so there's one speculation, and you could look at it and take bits and pieces, whatever you want. Again, you got to keep in mind that this is processing information that is out there. That one of the early things we learned in computing was what was called garbage in, garbage out. If you put garbage into something, you're going to get garbage out. And so most of the artificial intelligence now that is being programmed is reading libraries that have been given to it. For instance, Bing, which is the large Microsoft Corporation's artificial intelligence now. Not only is it a search engine now, but you can actually chat with it. And you can say these things, and it will chat back at you. But in producing the intelligence that Bing has, they had those computers not look at offensive places, not look at places that were promoting war, that were promoting racism, of separatism, and so on and so on. So it's, again, in the hands of the programmers. And I think we were discussing this next question at the Bible study, and a good point was made that where is it being written? And let me address it first. I said, what might the Armenian nation look like or B, if the nation had not accepted Christianity in the 4th century? And it goes through quite a bit of answers. And you know what? I'm going to put this all on our show notes. I'll let you read through all of the answers that I got, because not only this question, but I asked furthermore a simulated conversation between William Saroyan and Avedikis Sahagyan, two writers separated by geography and time. What if Hrant Dink and Nikol Pashinyan, the current prime minister, Hrant Dink, the one that was slain in Turkey, what if they were to meet, what their conversation might be like? So here we go. We're speculating what these conversations, but we're having these robots do it. We're having these artificial intelligent bots do it, where they are processing tons and tons and tons of information to give this to us. So on the question of Christianity, without Christianity, it is possible that the Armenian people would have had a different relationship with neighboring cultures and empires. The conversion of Christianity was a key factor in Armenia's integration into the wider Roman and Byzantine worlds and helped to establish a common culture and religious identity with other Christian nations. Without this common bond, it's possible that Armenia would have remained more isolated, less integrated into a wider region. Now, that's interesting because we've always felt that it was isolated. But you take this information and now process it with what you know. And now it gives you one more step, because here's somebody who's done other research outside of what you might have. But it's interesting because at the bottom of it, the Armenian nation would have been more vulnerable to the influences of neighboring cultures and religion. Christianity provided a sense of unity and identity that helped to strengthen the Armenian nation. Without this common bond, the nation may have been more susceptible to fragmentation and division. Now, okay, so where does it getting this information? That was one of the questions that was brought up, and rightly so, because you know it's all the information that you're going to put in. If you put garbage in, you're going to get garbage out. Well, think about it in this respect too. Today, with the large number of blogs, with the different places that you can, whether it's Reddit or on just blogs on websites, there is so much anti-Christian rhetoric that is going on within the Armenian community that you can't just say this is pro-Christian rhetoric that we're hearing, because there is so much. I've shared with you many times where people have referred to St. Gregory the Illuminator as St. Gregory the Darkener. the one who brought darkness into Armenia by bringing Christianity. And this is prevalent. You hear it. And sometimes this critical voice is more loud, more forceful, because it is fed with anger. And so, in a sense, these chatbots, these artificial intelligent harvesting areas, are receiving a lot of information from here and there. And yet it comes to this conclusion that basically your nation would have fallen apart had it not been for Christianity. And one of the things that is arguable, obviously you're never going to know, it never happened. We did accept Christianity. But at the end of the day, what do we have? Is it because of Christianity? Questions that we need to ask, and questions that stir up the entire discussion. As I said, it's a next step. It's not the destination. It's the next step. And this is what we did. This is what we did at our Bible study. Because ultimately, what are we thinking about? We're talking about issues of truth. A matter of what is truth. Just because somebody says it doesn't mean that it's true. Very important, because today, and this is why I brought it up in the Bible, it was like an incredible preface to what I wanted to bring about, is that so much of what we hear as Christian, quote-unquote Christian, is because somebody has said it, somebody has had the audacity to say it. For instance, I'm sure many of you have heard about that we adopt the Judeo-Christian ethic, work ethic, moral ethics, morals, moral code, and so on. That's interesting, right? Why do we accept that? Because somebody along the way has said that. Because somebody along the way has said that there is something called a New Testament, which therefore connotates that there has to be an Old Testament, and so there is a connection. And today, you have fundamentalist groups that are playing off of this, rather than understanding it in the historical context in which the church presented it originally. They're playing off of this. And one such preacher I discovered midnight, it was, and by midnight I meant in the middle of the night sometime, I can't remember when it was, I was up with a little bit of insomnia. Actually, I shouldn't even blame it on insomnia, just had a very, very late night, late work night. And so there I was, ready to go to bed, and I thought I'd, you know, scan through the channels. And there was this preacher on there who was talking about the Christian responsibility we have to the state of Israel. And he was citing scripture. He was quoting scripture, I mean, backwards, forwards. And if you listened to him and you didn't know where, you know, if you had no, let's say, Orthodox, or you hadn't been trained in Armodoxy, let me say it straight out, you'd believe that, oh, this is really Christian teaching. And it isn't. It isn't. In fact, one of the fundamental reasons we go into the Lenten season, and our church fathers point this out by the scriptural passages that they give us, is to show that, yeah, there is a stark contrast. You have heard that this is the way it was, but this is what I tell you, Jesus says. And each of them is a fulfillment of the law and the prophets. But in so doing, in that fulfillment, he ushers in the kingdom. And that kingdom is accessible by all of us, not to just a few, and certainly not to people that are claiming that there is some political agenda to it. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of what this guy preached. I will in the future. I do want to share it with people, but I don't want to give extra publicity where it's not necessary. But I do want to leave you with this one thought. And this comes from, this is a quote, which I was, let's see what her name is, Rachel Held Evans. It's a beautiful quote. I believe this. I've said this in so many words, but she says it so concisely. And I want to leave you with this quote. Rachel Held Evans. In talking about the Bible, this is what she says. If you are looking for verses with which to support slavery, you will find them. If you are looking for verses with which to abolish slavery, you will find them. If you are looking for verses with which to oppress women, you will find them. And if you are looking for verses with which to liberate or honor women, you will find them. If you are looking for reasons to wage war, you will find them. If you are looking for reasons to promote peace, you will find them. If you are looking for an outdated, irrelevant, ancient text, you will find it. And if you are looking for truth, believe me, you will find it. This is why there are times when the most instructive question to bring to the text is not what does it say, but what am I looking for? I suspect that Jesus knew this when he said, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened." If you want to do violence in this world, you will always find the weapons. And if you want to heal, you will always find the balm. I really, really like that. Said so nicely, concisely, exactly to the point. Makes the point, right? All right. Of course, yes, I will have a link on today's show notes. Not only to this, but everything else we talked about. Okay. Here's Susie. Be back in a couple minutes.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Epostle.net is the voice and expansion of In His Shoes Ministry. We are committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at either the InHisShoes.org website or epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you all of you for all of your notes, your love, your support for this ministry. I hope you enjoyed today's show. It's a little bit different. I wanted to talk about something that's very important, current, and probably more important than we might imagine, because it is shaping the way we are talking. It is shaping what we're discussing. Just the topics that are out there, the questions of who's saying it, what's being done. If you remember one of the first stories that I told you when I teach the children of my junior high class, religion class, the first question I told them, if you read an article written that said that inside of a McDonald's hamburger, somebody bit into it and they found a rat, a fried rat. And of course, everybody squeals and goes, "Ew, that's horrible." I said, "Would you eat at McDonald's again?" And of course, none of us would. You know, "No, no, no," everybody said. And I said, "Wouldn't it matter if you found out that article or that story was written by Mr. J. Box?" And it takes them a minute. Then they think about it and they go, "Oh, you mean Jack in the Box? I'm not telling you. I just said at the bottom of the article, it says written by J. Box. Would that matter?" And they start laughing. And yeah, it does matter. It does matter who gave you the story. If Mr. Jack in the Box gave it to you, then yeah, he's trying to get you not to eat at McDonald's. And he succeeded in doing that, right? So the author, the where it comes from, the source is very, very, very important. And that's part of this series that we do called Questions in Faith. That we find our faith by asking those important questions. Anyway, listen, I'm going to tell you about two important things that are coming up. One is called Giragi. Every Sunday night for the last month, we've been getting together online, and you can do that too at epostle.net at 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Yes, we are in the daylight hours now. So yes, look it up on Google, say, "What time is that in my time zone?" And it'll tell you, and join us. It's live. Just go to epostle.net and it's right on the front page. And while you're there, you'll also notice an ad for Reclaim 2023. We are gearing up for an incredible Reclaim with speakers and a screening of the movie Amerigatsi. Yes, you heard it first a couple months ago, right? When we had an interview with Mike Gurgin, the director, actor of that movie, the writer of that movie. He's going to be with us at Reclaim in Burbank at the Western Diocese headquarters. And if you can make it, please do so. It's March 25th. It's an all-day event, and you can get tickets right away. There'll be a link on today's show notes, tiny.cc/reclaim23, or go to epostle.net, and you'll find more information. Okay, that does it for our show. Looking forward to doing all the wonderful things that we do this week. I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. Overwhelmed, but looking forward to it. I want to ask for your prayers for very special people in our lives. One is Malene and one is Silva. Please keep them in your prayers. May God have mercy on these very, very special people in our lives. And with that, want to call it a day. On behalf of Susie, my producer, and myself, this is Father Boskin, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding.
Off Balan Top Visit.